Well, to discuss these issues more broadly, I'm joined now in our Melbourne studio by Tony Wood, a former senior executive with Origin Energy and now the director of the energy program at the Grattan Institute. And on the phone is Dr. Sarah Bice from the University of Melbourne's School of Government. She's an expert on corporate social responsibility and community engagement with a particular focus on mining, oil and gas projects. Welcome to you both. First to you, Tony, what is the role CSG is playing in the energy mix in Australia? How important is it?
Well, in terms of economic activity, both domestically and internationally, CSG will effectively quadruple, that's quadruple, four times the amount of gas produced on the east coast of Australia. Most of that gas will be exported to Southeast Asia, countries like Korea, China and Japan, and will dramatically add to Australia's export earnings. The total investment in Queensland is something well over $60 billion. So the economic activity is very significant, and it'll be the first time in the world that very large liquefied natural gas exports, that's LNG, have been based upon coal seam gas or CSG development. So it's a unique situation in the world. It's going to dramatically catapult Australia to the top ranks of gas exporters, but as we've already been discussing, it has its consequences.
It's also often pointed to as an essential transition fuel out of fossil fuels to renewables. Is that the way we should see it?
Well, when you burn gas in a power station to produce electricity, its emissions are approximately half the emissions from producing the same electricity from coal. There are potentially some emissions that are produced in the production of that gas, so you need to add those in total, but it's still significantly lower in terms of impact on greenhouse effects. But also, in addition to that, gas-fired power stations don't produce a lot of the other negative environmental materials that particulates in specifically that are the consequence of coal-fired power stations and are responsible for smog in many parts of the world. So there are some significant benefits that come from burning gas rather than coal from an environmental perspective, and clearly that has to be taken into account when we consider the balance of decisions that we need to make both here and also globally.
Nevertheless, Sarah Bice, we are seeing some communities really struggle with this. What's going wrong?
Look, I think the struggling comes very much from exactly what we heard in the first story and even a bit in the second story, and that is there is a real sense among communities of a lack of control. And one of the interviewees said they just wanted the right to say no, or that they felt like it was a big dumping wave coming over them. And what we see in these communities is there's concerns about a range of social issues. So there's construction booms that occur and many, many people enter into the communities. You've got property price busts in places where, like Roma, where for other reasons, because of that double whammy of the collapse in oil prices at the same time that CSG is beginning to wind back construction, people are leaving towns. There's the health and environmental concern. There's debates about compensation and land use. We've got issues in Australia with land ownership regulation and whether or not landowners have the right to say no, and then that's leading to a great deal of community protest. And as you could see, even from those two preceding stories, it's leading to conflict and dissension within communities that traditionally have been very unified.
Who's to blame for that? Have the companies been too aggressive?
I think that's a really difficult question, and I'm always reluctant to point a finger because I think these situations are so complex. So Tony can speak to the economic factors, and when you are looking at, you know, a quadrupling of economic input, when you are looking at an industry which is likely to become, and it may already be, the world's largest gas export, you've got such a broad range of macroeconomic factors and then local level social factors that it's very, very difficult to say who's to blame. But we all need to work together to solve the problem.
So how do you bring these two sides together then?
I was at a meeting yesterday of IPECO, which is an international peak body for oil and gas, and it was their social performance leads, and we were talking exactly about how to do that. And one of the key aspects is bringing together the communities and the companies on an individual face-to-face basis regularly, but ensuring that both parties have the opportunity to air all of their concerns with, and this is the important part, with the ability for both parties to have an equal power to say what should happen. And so I'll go back to this right to say no. Community members now are feeling that they have a loss of control, that they are losing the types of rural environments and lands that they signed up for when they moved to these towns or when they've lived in these towns their entire lives. And there needs to be an equal right to say no to these types of projects.
And Tony Wood, what do you think of that? Do you think that would make the situation less combative?
Look, I think we need one thing that needs to be brought out, and I'm sure many of your listeners know this, Michael, is that in Australia, the gas or any resource under the ground, that is about 18 centimetres, 18 inches below the surface, is not owned by the farmer. And that is a different situation from the United States, where farmers can become very rich.
I guess that's the problem, though, isn't it?
Exactly. So what you find here is a situation where the state owns those resources on behalf of all of us, including the farmers. On the other hand, the farmer is wanting to continue to undertake the activities they've been doing, possibly for generations. In some ways, it's a much more complicated version of what happens when governments want to acquire, you know, houses for developing new roads or whatever, railways or public transport. Now, those tensions can be quite severe. These ones are much more severe indeed because of the nature of the relationship that farmers have with their land, in a similar way that our Indigenous communities have relationships with the land as well. So how do you come to an arrangement in which those two very important rights, if you like, one right to farm, the other right to extract the resource, can be put together? And the only way you can do this is seriously, as Sarah suggested, I think, to bring together the parties, to get together. And actually, from a government perspective, it would be a sensible idea if we actually decided to have a consistent national approach to this. It seems crazy that we're doing it one way in Queensland and a completely different way, if not at all, in some parts of Victoria. So government needs to take a leadership there, but equally industry, the people who represent the farmers, also have to be at the table so we can develop a good set of rules that won't be perfect for everybody, but will be satisfactory for most.
Can I just speak
to that
point,
Michael? Okay, well, thank you very much for that. We do have to go. I'm sorry, sir. Just quickly, you can add to that, yes?
I just want to say Tony is absolutely right around regulation, and what we really need is a broader basins approach, looking at all of the resources in the basins, including coal seam gas, to begin to regulate properly, because right now we are not approaching these resources from a regulatory perspective in a way that's going to be most effective for Australia in the long term.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us. That's Dr. Sarah Bice and Tony Wood from the Grattan Institute.